Hello and welcome to Archaeology News Weekly. I'm David Connolly, and a big welcome back to Dave Horrocks, who does our MP3 mastering and his return from Kenya. And also a happy birthday to Alice, daughter of Diego and Paula. Best wishes to you. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details of each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. Iron Age remains have been found on a British school site. Historic Scotland are questioned over visitor numbers to a site in Shetland. Pictographs found in New Zealand may be derived from an ancient Asian Pacific culture. The controversy over the M3 motorway in Ireland rages on, and Native Americans are traced to six founding mothers. The oldest animation in the world has been discovered in Iran, and Neolithic finds are discovered in Azerbaijan. Stone Age axes are found off the Norfolk coast, and rare cave inscriptions are found in Sri Lanka. An Ontario lake reveals a mysterious structure beneath the water, and Loch Crew Equinox in March 2008 in Ireland is being prepared for. Quarrying permission near Thornborough Henges in England is thrown into disarray, and a ritual Turkish site changes our view on the Neolithic Revolution. And Irish ceramics are found in Bronze Age graves in Scotland. We also have news on a new online magazine dedicated to volunteer heritage activities. And so to the news. Archaeologists have found what they think is the remains of an Iron Age settlement under part of Wearside School in Sunderland, England. The surprising discovery was made after Sunderland Council asked for work because the school lay over the site of historic medieval Hilton Dean. But archaeologist Dr. Andy Towle said that they did not expect to find Iron Age remains. The school was built in the 1960s, so he thought that anything here would have been destroyed by the construction. In fact, if anything did survive, it should have been medieval archaeology. But to have found Iron Age archaeology was quite a surprise. The archaeological evaluation had looked at three areas, and two of them turned up nothing, but the third revealed a post pit and ring ditch, which would indicate an Iron Age roundhouse once stood on the site. Groups of children from the school are now helping to sift through the site, looking for artifacts and helping the archaeologists to investigate. Dr. Towle said that the kids were great and full of enthusiasm. He commented that when you've been doing it year in, year out, you lose some of that. But seeing the kids being so enthusiastic reminded him of his own enthusiasm. And it's been great fun. The investigation would probably be wrapped up in the coming few days. Information gained from the dig will be sent to Balfour Beatty and the council for analysis, but work will be going ahead as expected. Now, that's what it's all supposed to be about, isn't it? Fun, enthusiasm, discovery. I remember that. A challenge is being laid down for Historic Scotland to come forward with visitor numbers for Cliquemin Broch in Lerwick in Shetland, after hopes of access to the monument could be improved, were apparently quashed. Members of the Lerwick County Council were told in a letter from the agency that the small amount of visitors the monument receives makes the provision of improved parking unsustainable. The Broch proves popular with coachloads of tourists, though, who visit Lerwick during the summer months. But the coaches are forced to mount the pavement close to the Broch, and some have been known to park down Wester Loch itself. Hopes had been high that part of the pavement could have been converted to coach parking, but the council has come back to say that it can offer non-financial support only. And now, Historic Scotland has replied, claiming visitor numbers to the Broch do not justify any expense. The letter sparked a call from members to write back to the Regional Works Manager of Historic Scotland, Gavin Douglas, to ask for clarification on just how many visitors the Broch attracts. Michael Peterson told the committee the monument had been Shetland's second most popular tourist attraction. So let's hope that we can get more news on that later, and good news. Hanging Rock's famous Ru'atanawa image is probably derived from an Asian Pacific culture more than 4,000 years old, according to geographer, ecologist and planner Professor Haikai Tane. Professor Tane is an expert in traditional Dao iconography, the transfer of knowledge through symbols. he recently discovered a link between early Asian Pacific people's iconography and cave pictographs found in New Zealand. He reports in a paper presented in the Chinese Academy of Sciences that the Rutana Awi Wa pictograph from the Ophi cave has links to Tao symbolism. Archaeological discoveries in the 1970s indicate they may have been made by descendants of the Hemudu culture, prototype Polynesians who were boat nomads in the South China Seas between 8,000 and 4,000 years ago. And to ancient Tao experts, the icons still have meaning. In Asia Pacific iconography, the gourd, water dragon and sunbird are significant symbols containing cultural intelligence. Tao master Ren Faran readily identified the Rutanawa cave etchings as ancient Tao pictographs with readily identifiable components, suggesting that humans visited New Zealand before the generally accepted time frame of 1,000 years ago runs contrary to current New Zealand academic accounts of the first people to arrive in the country. When the paper was presented in China, it attracted considerable interest. However, it is consistent with Chinese archaeological discoveries of the Hemudu culture south of Hangzhou Bay, which dates back 7,000 years. From genetic research undertaken at the University of Hawaii and reported in the Pan-Pacific Science Congress proceedings, the migrations of economic plant species such as cotton show that they were taken to the Americas around 6,000 years ago, where they were domesticated. They were then returned as domestic plants to Asia by 4,500 years ago. He suggests these people may have visited the South Island of New Zealand during their travels across the Pacific. The Irish National Roads Authority is insisting that construction work on the controversial M3 motorway in County Meath in Ireland is not damaging a protected national monument at Rathlough. Campaigners against the road claim the work is undermining the ancient fort around 2.5 kilometres from the Hill of Tara. A protester has chained herself inside a tunnel dug into the hill in an effort to prevent the work from going ahead. The Gardaí are currently monitoring the situation, and the NRA, meanwhile, says the construction work is not encroaching on the footprint of Rathlough. The subterranean protester is refusing to emerge from a 10-metre-deep tunnel dug into the motorway site. Lisa Feeney from Dublin says that she was comfortable, well-equipped, and was passing her time by reading a book by candlelight. "They haven't cut off my air supply yet, so I'm prepared to stay here for months," she added. Well, I'll tell you what, threaten to put her on an archaeological wage, and that'll get her out. Nearly all of today's Native Americans in North, Central, and South America can trace part of their ancestry back to six women whose descendants immigrated around 20,000 years ago. These women left a particular DNA legacy that persists today in about 95% of all Native Americans. DNA is found in the mitochondria, the power plant of the cells, and unlike the DNA found in the nucleus, mitochondrial DNA is passed along only by the mother. So it follows a lineage that connects a person to his or her mother, then to the mother's mother, and so on. The researchers created a family tree that traces the different mitochondrial DNA lineages found in today's Native Americans. And by noting mutations in each branch and applying a formula for how often such mutations arise, they calculated how old each branch was. That piece of information revealed when each branch arose in a single woman. The six founding mothers apparently did not live in Asia. The DNA signatures they left behind aren't found there. They probably lived in Beringia, the now submerged land bridge that stretched to North America. Long considered a modern invention, animation has apparently been lying about its age. A 5,200-year-old bowl found in Iran's burnt city in the 1970s features a series of five images that researchers have only recently identified as being sequential, much like those in a zoetrope. Giving the bowl a spin, one would see a goat leaping to snatch leaves from a tree. The remarkable piece of pottery was unearthed from a burial site by Italian archaeologists, who hadn't noticed a special relationship between the images that adorned their circumference. That discovery was made years later by Iranian archaeologist Dr. Mansour Sajjadi, who was later employed to direct the excavations of the burnt city located 57 kilometres from the city of Zabol in southeastern Iran province of Sistan-Baluchistan. While no one questions the early instance of animation, researchers have been at odds over the significance of the earthenware bull's artwork. It was originally thought to depict the goat eating from the Assyrian tree of life, but archaeologists are now pointing out that it actually predates the Assyrian civilization by 1,000 years, so it would be quite difficult to show a motif that did not exist yet. Iran's Cultural Heritage, Tourism and Handicrafts Organization and director Mohsen Ramazani have created an 11-minute documentary on the discovery. You can find more at this website here, and I've reduced it in size for ease. You'll find it at tinyurl.com/2YS987. That was tinyurl.com/2YS987. Neolithic and 3rd to 1st millennium BCE archaeological findings belonging to Yalavlu Tepe culture have been discovered in Zakatala region of Azerbaijan. Local farmers discovered stone Neolithic horse-tooth chopper under the ground, and fishermen discovered Yalavlu Tepe pottery in the banks of the Alazan River. Children's graves have also been discovered there. And this unique evidence of a rich historical heritage in the area show it is necessary to undertake archaeological excavations there. Some of the world's best-preserved prehistoric landscapes survive in pristine condition at the bottom of the North Sea, archaeologists claimed. The tools of the Stone Age Norfolk men who hunted mammoths on what is now the bed of the North Sea have turned up in Holland, spotted by an amateur archaeologist in a load of gravel. The 28 finely worked hand axes are believed to date from at least 50 to 60,000 years ago, and possibly are far older. They were described by archaeologist Phil Harding as the single most important find of Ice Age material from beneath the North Sea. If the dating is correct, and it may be established by fragments of bone and a tooth found in the same load of gravel, that the people who used them were Neanderthal, not Homo sapiens. The lower sea level at the time, with huge volumes of water locked up in the Ice Age polar ice caps, mean that the area the tools were dredged from, 8 miles off Great Yarmouth, and under 25 metres of seawater, was then dry land, when Britain was not yet an island. The North Sea is of immense value to archaeologists, and it's the largest area of a drowned landscape of ancient Europe. It's vital that parts of it should be considered as potential World Heritage Site. English heritage archaeologists are now joining their counterparts in the Netherlands to study the find. What is exciting the experts this time is that the fact that the axes were dredged up with a quantity of silt, meaning that they've probably been lying buried in mud exactly where they were dropped so many millennia ago. A cave with rare ancient inscriptions dating back more than 10,000 years has reportedly been discovered at Badungala in Sri Lanka. Archaeologist officials say that the inscriptions date back to the Endera Yugaya period. This find dates from the domestication of animals in the area, and so is of incredible importance. In the spring of 2005, diving was conducted in McDonald Lake as part of a unique submarine project at the Halliburton Forest and Wildlife Reserve. Repeatedly, staff of Halliburton Forest would stumble upon an unusual stone structure, perched on top of a rock ledge at a depth of 40 feet beneath the present lake level. Initially, the structure was considered a complex version of a perched erratic, huge rocks carried by glaciers thousands of years ago and dumped where they happened to melt. When several geologists and archaeologists saw images of the object, they expressed doubts about its natural origin. Halliburton Forest then engaged the services of an underwater archaeologist to examine the structure. Before diving, he explained that so far he had never encountered man-made rock cairns, which were stabilised without the help of things called shim stones. If he found these, that would convince him that the structure was man-made, not natural. After a 30-minute dive examining the rock assembly closely and very carefully and taking pictures, the expert emerged with the unequivocal conclusion, with the existence of 3 shim stones, that the assembly of 7 rocks was the result of human activity and not a fluke of nature. Subsequently, Halliburton Forest turned to the services of a statistician to calculate the probability of 7 rocks falling on top of each other to create this structure. Albeit difficult to assess, he reported back that even four rocks creating a natural structure was almost unattainable, but the probability of seven rocks hitting at the right time at the right place was virtually impossible. The geologist pointed to a dramatic drought which gripped eastern North America between 9,000 and 7,000 BCE, where conditions were so dry during that lake levels in the Great Lakes were up to 50 metres lower, and inland lakes like McDonald's Lake, which were still fed by spring meltwater, were still many metres lower than their present level. It seems that McDonald Lake was singled out by early humans to build an elaborate stone cairn, probably because the trout that survived there, and still do to this day. Happy fishing there. The Irish Office of Public Works will have staff in attendance at Cairn T at Loch Crewe, about 40 kilometres from Newgrange in County Meath in Ireland, for the equinox illumination on the mornings of March the 20th, 21st and 22nd of this year. This will be happening between 6:15 a.m. and 7:30. Admission to the Chamber of Cairn T is free of charge. As the chamber is quite small, only 5 to 6 people can be inside at any one time. Visitors are requested to stay inside for only a few minutes so that everyone can get a chance to visit. Please note that it's very important that visitors dress warmly and are wearing stout shoes. The climb to the top of Cairnbane East is very steep and it can be slippery after rain or on a frosty morning. Well, rather you than me, but send me a photograph. Plans for a controversial quarry extension near Thornborough Henges, North Yorkshire in England, have been thrown into disarray following a new legal challenge. Tarmac Northern won planning permission in January 2007 from North Yorkshire County Council to extract 1.1 million tonnes of sand and gravel over 8 years from land at Ladybridge Farm, between Beedale and Ripon, half a mile from the nearest of the three Bronze Age earthwork henges of Thornborough Moor. Tarmac said the unanimous decision would ensure the future prospects of the 15 full-time quarry workers and hauliers where reserves were almost exhausted on the current quarry. The henges, described as the Stonehenge of the North, have legal protection as scheduled ancient monuments, but worried campaigners who organised a 10,000-name petition insisted that their surroundings, including Ladybridge, must be protected from the effects of further quarrying. Some preliminary work has been done at Ladybridge, but mineral extraction has not yet started. However, by quashing the decision, this has given hope to some of the campaigners. One of the most intriguing developments in archaeology in recent decades is a serious study of ancient ceremonial life. Previously, ceremonial or ritual objects were the odd bits left over after archaeologists identified arrowheads, cooking pots and other objects with more or less obvious functions. Sometimes these leftovers were exceptionally beautiful works of art, but were considered unscientific speculation to attempt to reconstruct the beliefs behind their creation and use. Now, however, it's generally recognised that ceremonial objects and structures can provide key insights into many facets of ancient cultures. In fact, some archaeologists think ceremony was key to the origins of civilization itself. In the January the 18th issue of the journal Science, German archaeologist Klaus Schmidt is interviewed about his work at the 11,000-year-old site of Göbekli Tepe in Turkey. According to Andrew Curry, the author of the Science article, Göbekli Tepe is situated on the most prominent hilltop for miles around. It consists of at least 20 underground rooms that contain a number of T-shaped stone pillars that are 8 feet tall and each weigh around 7 tons. The pillars are engraved with the images of animals including leopards, snakes and spiders. This is not a place where people lived, it's a place of ceremony, said Schmidt. It's the first man-made holy place. To find such a large ceremonial centre at such an early time suggests that it was the need for communal rituals that first brought people together. Agriculture, pottery, domesticated animals and cities all came later. Perhaps it was religion and not technology that fermented the Neolithic Revolution and led to the rise of civilization. Further evidence that prehistoric Scots travelled considerable distances has come from two graves in Upper Largy near Kilmartin in Argyll and Bute. We already mentioned in one of our previous articles that one grave contained three distinctive beakers, which Alison Sheridan of the National Museum of Scotland describes as belonging to an early international style, best paralleled by finds from the Lower Rhine region of modern-day Netherlands. A second grave has been dug at a later date, cutting through the ring ditch, and this contained a highly unusual bowl, whose upper part is of the classic Irish style current around 2150 BCE, but whose four stubby feet are a Yorkshire feature. This so-called hybrid polypod food vessel indicates the range of stylistic influences on the Kilmartin Valley, an area of West Scotland with an unusually high number of standing stones, cairns and chambered tombs during the Neolithic and Early Bronze Age. Polypod. You just can't make these names up. I must try and use that word today. Anyway, our final bit of news is about a new online magazine which has just come out, produced by Past Horizons and Badger, called, unsurprisingly, Past Horizons. Our first issue involves stories about High Pasture Cave. We've got news about the threat to the cave art in Lascaux. We've got articles on graffiti, reports from a volunteer who's been working on a fieldwork project in Israel. We've got editorials, viewpoints, and of course the amazing Annie Evans, the Dig Cook, gives us a report on culinary escapades during fieldwork, and also a delicious recipe. We have profiles on this issue, Professor David Kennedy from the University of Western Australia, crosswords, cartoons, and so much more. If you want to have a look at this magazine, go along to www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. We are hoping to bring out the second issue sometime in May, but you can subscribe. And this is a completely free resource, and we're going to be focusing upon volunteer archaeology around the world. Can I now remind people that many new archaeological heritage and employment opportunities, as well as the UK Heritage Calendar, library, guidance sections, videos, and so much more, can be found on Badger, www.bajr.org. And more can always be found on the amazing Stone Pages, news.stonepages.com. Thanks very much for listening to the Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you return to us again next week.